Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Maduro likes to blame things on the United States, and I don't know how he can twist this to blame America.
Okay.
The story comes from foreignpolicy.com. A fleet of rundown Venezuelan oil tankers carrying some 4 million barrels of oil and other fuels is wallowing in the Caribbean, not because of bad weather or mechanical problems, but because Venezuela's state-owned oil company, Petróleos de Venezuela S.A., abbreviated throughout the rest as PVSA,
okay,
does not have the cash to get the tankers to their final destination. Beyond the obvious environmental risk, it's doubly bad news for Venezuela, a country in dire economic straits and full-fledged crisis with a political impasse, jeez, looting, dangerous food and health supply shortages, and a massive protest.
Let's put this in another other words. These people, the government of Venezuela, have a resource that is basically money. I mean, they have oil.
And they can extract it really easy. They don't have to frack or anything, and they've been doing it for years, and they've had infrastructure for a long time. And you got American oil companies that are putting millions and millions of dollars into fracking and equipment, and they they're still making some money at the 50-some-odd dollar, and they're not raking in huge like they were a few years ago. But when I was out in Colorado, them guys were... You know, they're putting on and they're still drilling wells in Venezuela. It's like super easy. And also they're farming. They could dominate farming and agriculture big time because they got such a
great
good
weather.
Soil. They got a lot of good stuff going for them. So this is like the easiest place in the world almost to like literally support and export and make money.
But
it's just falling apart.
They can't.
Because socialism.
And this is probably the best part of the story. To show just how absolutely horrible things are in Venezuela, they project oil production will linger near a 23-year low in the year 2017. So they've got this thing that's basically liquid money.
Yes.
What they call it in the opening?
Black gold.
The opening of the Beverly Hillbillies. Black gold.
That's right.
They can't get it out of the country because they can't afford to clean the ships in a timely manner. And they then can't afford to like power the ships, even though they've got liquid gold that gets turned into fuel. They can't. They can't do it.
It's bewildering.
And so their oil production is going to be at a 23-year low.
Venezuela, years ago, I've been there.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And the thing is, I mean, 10, 15 years ago, it was beautiful. I mean, the economy was thriving, and there was it was just beautiful. I mean, the people were really friendly and everything. But I'll tell you, I wouldn't go there now. It's scary.
It's a very deadly place to be, and you can't have a gun to defend yourself either. Legally,
no. And if you're even if you're going through with a knife or anything like that, you're going to get yourself in trouble. It's just scary. But, you know, I'll tell you, it's an opportunity for Shark Tank to go on there. Maybe they should go down there.
Shark Tank, like the investment thing that would, the television show, you mean?
Yeah, but you know, I mean, if they could work out some differences and everything else, think about the gas prices. I mean, if they want to control the gas prices in America and actually put America to work, I mean, I don't know what the prices are out where you, but I mean, when it got over $5 a gallon, it just caused a big problem.
You got to look at government literally as a parasite to really put it in perspective. The parasite's always going to want to grow. It's always going to want to, you know, keep on, you know, laying eggs or whatever. It's just, and that's literally what's happened with the bureaucrat class. I mean, retiring bureaucrats in the United States are earning like 80% to 90% of their actual working income, and they're producing and doing nothing. And actually, they were literally producing and doing nothing while they were working, you know, making 100% of the income.
Yeah, it's sad because from what I understand that the average income down there is frightening to see somebody trying to actually live off of that.
Yeah, well, very few people are able to even be able to afford food at the moment. It's hard to feed a family three meals a day down in Venezuela. It is a dire situation, and it sounds like it's only going to get worse, especially as the country's number one export is now no longer exportable due to the failure of the government.
With all due respect to Patrick, I don't think he made himself clear. The gas prices in Arizona are routinely $2 less than California.
Okay.
But we're right across the river. I mean, we're that close. And I think it proves your point, because here in Arizona, we don't have oil fields. We don't have, many refineries like they do in California. So the only answer is the government interference and regulation in California that causes the price to be so much more.
I just happen to have seen a story that apparently there's some kind of passenger identification bill that's going through the legislature there in Arizona.
No, meaning the cops can demand ID from passengers?
To where if you are the passenger in a vehicle and you do not have sufficient identification,
that's bad.
You could go to jail for 4 months.
Wow, that's bad.
Oh boy, I'd have fun with that one.
Yes.
I love it when they want to know who I am in the car. And just,
aren't you going down there now?
No, I got some other stuff going on.
Oh, that's right. You changed your plans.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, if the bill passes, a passenger would be required to have evidence of identity.
Wow, that's
crazy.
Failure
to do so would be a Class 2 misdemeanor, which allows for up to 4 months incarceration.
Is that constitutional?
Yes, it probably is, because the word passenger, I'm sure, is a commercial term.
Media report on what the bill's. I'm not actually looking at the text of the legislation.
But I'm sure to use the language passenger, because passenger is a commercial term. If you have your friend riding in a car with you, then your friend's riding in a car with you. But if your friend is a passenger, then that would, denote that maybe you're hiring
hired.
For a fare. Yeah. You're for hire. It's all these commercial terms.
Good luck convincing a cop of that, though. Jay, you had further comments on this whole dolphin slaughtering controversy.
Sure. Well, what it comes down to is what whale meat. So there's been a big international push to stop the Japanese from whaling.
I've heard about this, yeah.
So they had like the whale wars.
It's been
wars.
Going on a long time.
Oh, right. They've had the whale wars on TV and stuff. You can watch that where the guys go in their boats and they, harass the whalers.
Ah, okay.
And, I mean, that right there, I'm not saying I agree with whaling, but I definitely don't agree with these folks that are going out and hitting them with water cannons and, causing, these fishermen, these whalers to be harmed or injured on their boats. I don't agree with any violence, even though their intentions, are true and honorable to save the whales.
Yeah.
They're causing violence to other people over. I've even gone so far as I've literally taken people's animals from their houses because they were starving them to death.
Yeah.
And, I've done that before.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that you're well within your right to do that. The argument would be that those are those people's animals and that's their private property. And I say to that, well, let's hear it out in arbitration. If you've got a problem with somebody kidnapping an animal that you've been abusing, then go ahead, go and argue in court why you should be able to just abuse your animals and see how that goes. I don't think that most compassionate people would stand for that. I don't believe that. I think that private property breaks down when you're abusive towards it.
I've grown up in the horse industry my whole life, and you see these old fat ponies go through an auction, and you hear the auctioneer say, "Boys, this one's a Jap." And what Jap means is that the pony's got a lot of fat on it, and they look like ripples on their hide. And Jap is the Japanese market. That pony will bring $5-6 a pound.
Is that a lot?
On the hoof. That is a real lot, because generally ponies, the slaughter buyers don't even really want ponies, so they're not really worth messing with, for the processing and whatnot. But when a pony japs, because they're going to go to the Japanese market, they bring tremendous money. So what has happened in the past few years, literally, directly because of the whaling industry being hammered on so much, is that horses are tremendously valuable right now for slaughter. I was at a horse auction 2 weeks ago in New Holland, Pennsylvania, and I watched horses bring over $1 a pound, and the slaughter buyers were fighting over them. And I seen some ponies that brought $3-4 a pound. What's going on now is they actually, horse meat is becoming tremendously popular in Japan as imitation whale meat. And what they want is they want that horse with the real fat on their meat. And they take the fat and they scrape it off, and then they inject it into the horse meat and they sell it as imitation whale meat. And I talked to a guy about 3 days ago, actually, about, I said, why are the killer buyers giving so much for horses right now? He says, well, there's a horse shortage in this country. There's a horse shortage in North America. So this place I've been helping out a lot is called Blue Star Equiculture. It's a horse sanctuary in Palmer, Mass., and they take old carriage horses and retire them forever. It's a nonprofit. It's an awesome operation, and I'm going to run their compost deal this summer for them. Anyways, they rescued a few Shire horses. These are the horses that built America, literally. Well, built the world, really, you know, up until automobiles. And they are being bred now, these horses, and they breed them specifically to be raised for slaughter for the Japanese imitation whale meat market.
In Venezuela, you've got Bitcoin miners who are doing pretty good business. You know, they've got free power, which is really the bulk of what you need to manufacture Bitcoin, or not manufacture, but mine Bitcoin into existence. You got to have hardware, computer hardware that can do the work, and then power to power the hardware. It's a very costly power-wise thing to do. And if power's cheap, then it can make it worthwhile. If the power is expensive, you're going to lose money. So in Venezuela, you can make money on Bitcoin if you don't get caught. And the secret police are tasked with tracking down Bitcoin miners there. And like the police in the United States, who look at power bills to see, oh, there's a big spike in this person's power bill. It's gone up. Maybe they're growing marijuana, like with the lighting that typically can be very expensive to grow marijuana. They're doing the same thing
actually,
with Bitcoin.
Last night at Taco Tuesday, a couple of us were talking about, you know, Trump's proposed border adjustment tax, which means avocados will wind up being 20% more expensive at minimum. And somebody said, well, why don't we just grow avocados here? And I said, well, the climate in New Hampshire isn't conducive to doing that.
Nope.
Now, if you wanted to grow some, then, you know, get a bunch of heat lamps and now the...
Get a greenhouse or something.
Well, get a greenhouse or, you know, like the lamps and then,
right.
You know, the power company will see a spike. They're growing marijuana there. And then the cops come in and raid and you just have avocados.
Shoot your dog.
It appears the Venezuelan authorities have had enough of Bitcoin. Over the past 2 weeks, police in Venezuela had arrested 8 Bitcoin miners in 3 different cities. While some of them were accused of cybercrime and stealing energy, others were merely selling the Bitcoin mining hardware. In addition to that, the country's main exchange, SurBitcoin, had to halt operations as the company's bank closed their accounts. While the country's economy is in a state of turmoil and the national currency, the bolivar, has been in hyperinflationary freefall for some time, the socialist regime in the Latin American country subsidizes electricity to the point where it's almost free. As covered in a popular article published on Reason.com, that was the one that we shared here, where they actually interviewed some of these miners without revealing their real names and things like that. In November, this has made Bitcoin mining popular among some tech-savvy Venezuelans. And to top it off, Venezuela's biggest Bitcoin exchange, SurBitcoin, had to halt operations. They received a notice from their bank, Banesco, on February 2nd that their bank account would be closed the next day. And let me tell you, I can relate. This has happened to me. I had TD Bank give me a similar notice telling me I had literally one day to go and get the money out of the account. They'll send me the check later anyway, but if I wanted the money right away, I would have had to have gone tomorrow. They overnighted that notice to me, and they don't tell you why they're closing your account. It's just this sort of terse letter that they're exercising their contractual...
We're closing it because...
Yeah, their reason is that they have a contractual, in their agreement, the terms of service, it says somewhere in there, all that legalese, you know, that they have you agree to, it says somewhere in there that We can terminate your account anytime we want, and we don't have to tell you why.
Barack Obama was our greatest president.
Why?
Because he ended the Democratic Party.
I thought Democratic Party still exists.
Well, it's pretty much done now.
You think so?
I've been hearing that for 20-some-odd years.
Let me say one more thing before I hang up, because I want to listen to my answer. Repealing the Johnson Amendment by Donald Trump is what a true leader does. And I will hang up.
What is the Johnson Amendment? What is that?
It is a provision in the U.S. tax code that prohibits all 501 CO3 nonprofit organizations from endorsing a opposing political candidate.
Oh.
And that's what a true leader does.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners. If you're like me, then you really enjoy Free Talk Live and the message of liberty. Yet you also may not have a lot of time to listen to an entire episode of Free Talk Live. So you listen to the Digest instead. If you enjoy the Digest, please donate $5 to $10 per month via Patreon, or send some Bitcoin or Ether instead. See the show description for details on how to do so.
There was a lot of Republicans who came to the Ron Paul, you know, camp in 8 and 12, and a lot of them figured out how corrupt the system was. So I'm really hoping a lot of the Bernie folks figure it out and understand it, and maybe they'll move, you know, to the libertarian platform, or, you know, just become anarchist or whatever, because it has to stick with some of them.
Well, they have to have a paradigm shift before they can do those things. I mean, if you believe in Bernie Sanders, you're probably a socialist, and so to join the libertarians.
I've talked to a lot of people who've actually had a little bit of a paradigm shift. They're coming over to the ideas of anarchy.
In any one state, if you do manage to get the 51% or more to have the vote to secede and you pull it off, does that not initiate aggression upon the rest of the people in the state who don't want the state to secede?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Daryl, what do you think about that?
The existence of government aggresses against people already. So, you know, my preferred thing is, if you don't want to secede, then you should be allowed to not secede, and there should be a separation of government and geography. But right now, that seems to not be a very popular concept.
Yeah, I'm sure that if somebody wanted to keep paying money into the federal government, they would probably keep taking checks from folks who were in a seceded state. You know, as far as what you're saying, though, is that this political system is going to force itself, whatever the current construction of it is, it's going to force itself on people who don't consent to it. That much is true. But ultimately, there's a similar argument that I think, you know, we've heard before, which is that, oh, well, you know, you libertarians, you just want to get elected and take away government programs. Isn't that also aggression? Aren't you aggressing by forcing your political system, which is a smaller government or no government political system, on people who want to have a big government? Generally, as a libertarian, you would support the non-aggression principle, the idea that it's not okay to use aggressive force to achieve political or social goals. I think most libertarians would also agree that they still want to roll back the government, because a smaller government is a less aggressive government. The argument that a smaller government, which of course in most cases getting the federal government out of the way and seceding is going to result in a lower burden of government,
yes,
all in all. So lessening the government is ultimately the goal of many libertarians. And I can understand the argument that, hey, you're forcing that on me, but ultimately that's the government that's forcing things on you. The libertarians are just trying to lessen the amount of force that's being used.
And generally when I hear these sort of objections, and there are other things that wind up getting said, but basically what I'm hearing is, I've heard some libertarian terms, and I'm just going to use them against libertarians to try to claim that they're actually the aggressors, because I don't understand what libertarianism actually is.
The FCC, by the way, there's been some interesting news. We haven't really covered it yet here on Free Talk Live, but the new chairman of the FCC was a previous board member or whatever. So, you know, he's not brand new to the FCC. He's been around since 2012, but he's one of the Republicans who were in the minority during the Obama administration. And they do seem to be rolling back some of the regulations on radio stations and television stations. There actually have been a few different things that they've just gotten rid of since Trump was in office. So, you know, Trump's bad on a lot of stuff, but at least on the FCC side of things, it does seem that the FCC's nosiness and busyness is getting a little bit lessened, which is good. And there's actually another headline about they're planning on rolling back net neutrality as well at the FCC.
I don't think the Democratic Party's dead. I think the exact opposite. I think they're going to come back with a Bernie Sanders 2.0, maybe a little bit younger, and it's going to be a lot worse. It's going to be I think Hillary Clinton with a divided Congress, I think in 5 or 6 years, we might actually be wishing for that. Now, I'm all for Trump doing as many, you know, liberty-oriented things as possible, you know, FCC, or if in theory he does something with Obamacare or the tax rate or whatnot. But I got the exact opposite feeling. I heard the guy earlier say that the Democratic. I think they're enrolling people to vote now. I mean, they're not going to do. I mean, he barely won, you know, this time around. And I got the feeling, you know.
Democrats are going to crank up their machine and possibly be able to unseat Trump in a re-election bid in 4 years? Is what you're saying?
No doubt.
I think next year we will have a really good idea of exactly what is going to happen in 2020. And the reason I say that is the midterm elections, generally the party that's in power winds up losing some seats. Now, the question is whether or not the Democrats will wind up taking majorities in both houses of Congress, or will they only, you know, just pick up some seats but not necessarily take a majority? I think if they take majorities in both houses and wind up, you know, quote unquote, stopping Trump from doing some of whatever Trump wants to do, then they might wind up having a, you know, better shot of, you know, having Trump be only a one-term president.
I would like to see a gridlock to where, like, you know, the House of Representatives are set up so they're, you know, mostly Democrat, to where everything they do, Trump hopefully vetoes them, and then they just keep on vetoing one another. That's what I want to see. Nothing.
That's always nice when that happens. Yeah,
that would be best case scenario here.
Jay Noon, what is the latest on the property tax thing? And let's take it back with as brief of a recap as you can on what the past was first.
So this particular property would be my father's farm in Palmer, Mass.
Not the house that you lost. Correct. A few years ago in Palmer.
So if people Google search my name, like Jay Noon and Cop Block, or Jay Noon and Free Keen, or Jay Noon and Town of Palmer,
yep,
all them videos show up, or you and Pete Air, and, you know, all this great stuff.
Classic videos.
Yeah, they are... all the time I'm getting people just, wow, watch that video, that's so funny, that's awesome. Anyways, so none of that really has anything to do with my farm. So the farm belongs to me and my brothers, and my father passed away 4 years ago, and my dad bought the farm in 1983. He never registered the deed. A lawyer just went in and registered the deed like a year later, and my father was taken to court in 91 for not paying the property taxes.
By the town.
By the town. And he asked them for the instrument he signed that required him to participate in a real estate tax scheme. And the town had 30 days to produce it. The next court date, the town did not show up. The case was dismissed.
Wow.
In 2010-ish,
how do you 2011. Get, hold on. How do you get a court trial on non-payment of taxes?
You can't. You cannot in Massachusetts.
So what happened there? How did he get one?
Well, it was a hearing.
A hearing.
That's all it was a hearing in 1991. In 2011, the town of Palmer filed a case in land court. And the land court is basically one of these administrative agencies, you know, created in the 1880-something, you know, after the Civil War, after, you know, the State of Massachusetts or Commonwealth of Massachusetts Corporation was created. Anyway, so we go to land court to these hearings. We went to two hearings up there, and we filed a lot of paperwork. We pretty much did all the right stuff. We demanded, you know, for the injured party to fill the consideration of the claim. We wanted to know who the man or woman was that had a claim. stacks and stacks of paperwork. We hammered them. They just blanketly denied everything. We really hammered on a demand for a trial by jury of peers.
Now, when was this? I missed that.
This was 2011.
Okay.
Oh, well, they filed in 2010, I think. And then I think in 2011 went to a hearing. We went to federal court, did what's called a removal, remove the case into federal court.
Okay.
And then that was basically the federal court was like, well, that you haven't been injured. You haven't stated an injury upon which relief could be granted.
So no standing.
So they said we had no standing. What federal court did do, though, it was pretty interesting in that, is they tried, the first thing the town tried to do was say that us Noon boys, had no standing because, you know, there was no will to the property and this, that, and the other thing. And the federal court actually was on our side for that particular deal. They were like, yes, Jay Noon and his brothers absolutely have standing as in the place of Spud Noon.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of cool. And so they kicked the case out. But yeah, so they kicked the case out, and so I appealed it in federal appeals court.
Mm-hmm.
And federal appeals court said that basically until the town does something, like actually remove, I can't remember the actual language off the top of my head. I should have read this a couple of days ago, but until the town does something, we basically don't have a case. The people in land court, in all these courts, I'm very, very sweet to them, very nice to them. I have
the clerks.
Very little issues with anybody in any of these, you know, places. And this lady helps us look through all the judgments, and we looked through judgments for like the past year, and we flipped through thousands of them, and not a single one has a signature.
But there's a line for a signature.
There's a line for a signature, and there's no signature.
Is there a printed name underneath?
There is a printed name underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
But still, an unsigned check is no good.
Mm.
An unsigned anything is no good. And these lower courts just accept it.
Right.
So one of the strategies I'm going to take is whoever the sheriff or constable is that actually comes to do whatever they're going to do, I'm actually going to put a claim in against their insurance bond. Because
he's enforcing an unsigned order?
We're going to go based simply on that. When they do make a move, whoever the constable is or the sheriff, their bond is going to have a claim against it. It would be just like making a claim against somebody's automobile insurance, essentially, if they damage your car or their car causes you damage.
Now, who do you file that with?
So the company is called Bursum and Bloom, I believe.
This is the bonding agency?
The bonding agency, yes.
It's interesting you bring this up because I was just in a hearing in New Hampshire this week at the State House where Dick Marple, who we've talked about before, is this state representative who's kind of this outside-the-system guy who wants to, you know, get the government out of people's lives. Interesting character. But he was talking about bonding, and the testimony made it sound, I got all this on video, so you're welcome to check it out when you get a chance. I haven't uploaded it yet, but the testimony made it sound like the average person could not put a claim in on a bond.
Well, Mark Stevens basically instructs people how to go file with the bonding agent.
Uh-huh.
The bonding company, basically the town, from what I understand, I don't really know how bonds work, but basically it's their insurance agent for liability. If the town does any damage to you or the state does any damage to you, that you go to their bonding agent there and that indemnifies them for damages, and you file a claim with them.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.